So warm welcome, a really warm welcome, everybody. What a delight it is to be here all together, practicing together, and what a delight it is for me to be teaching with Kim, Ying, and David again. So a deep bow to my co-teachers. Just sometimes as you guys might imagine, with four teachers, we have to plan right before what we're going to say. Okay, you say that, I'll say this, and it's such a at the end of our planning meetings, my heart is like so full. I'm always like, oh, this is so great to work with you guys. So we're hoping that our enthusiasm, our love of this study and practicing together is a little bit contagious. And that we can share it with you all. So, with that, I'll turn it over to one of my co-teachers, maybe Ying, who can introduce herself.
So just a warm welcome also for everybody. Yeah, I want to also expand on the enthusiasm. And as I was sending out this email, I just noticed the ever-expanding list of people who are interested in the sutta study and the practices, and kind of really warm up my heart. And I do hope that as we explore this topic on wise speech, we can expand our enthusiasm and the warmth all around, even including people who you contact with and you meet in some ways. So I'll pass it down to David.
Thank you, Ying. Good morning, everybody. Yeah, lovely to be here. We'll say it several times today, and then also repeating as we go forward, just how integral a part of the practice the attention to speech can be. And so we're just really happy to be engaging in wise speech in the community of practice here at the same time that we sort of study it from the outside. We hope to be able to explore it a bit from the inside. Kim.
Yeah, I'll just echo what my colleagues have said in terms of the beauty of our opportunity to teach together and just the warmth of having a growing community of people who are interested in engaging, particularly with these Pali Canon teachings and seeing how they can inform our lives even so many centuries and millennia later. So I have the good fortune of being able to being asked to summarize all of the many wonderful registration forms. We check where you're from, and we invite the opportunity to say something about your interest in the class. And so I'm always inspired to read these, and we do actually read them. And so I thought I'd share just a few of those, because we have so many people, we're not going to have a chance for everybody to introduce themselves, although you'll get to meet each other in breakout rooms. But just want to share a little bit about what this group expressed on their forms. So, well, just first of all, sort of demographics of location, at least. We have people here from 9 countries and 20 US states, at least among the registrations. I don't know if everyone made it. So that's impressive. So we have quite an international and broad group. And then I wanted to start with a quote from one of the forums that kind of sets the tone, which said, "Speech, in my experience, is highly impulsive." Anybody relate to that somehow? Yeah, so speech is conditioned, and we see how it comes forth. So then some of the other areas that people mentioned as interest in this topic are the aspect of sila, of that would be speech as the precept of the fourth precept. And then also people pointed out that they knew that speech was part of the Eightfold Path. And, it's the third step of the Eightfold Path. And so that frames it as an action that's skillful or unskillful, that can move us toward or away from suffering. And so there were many kind of sub areas, maybe summarized into a few. the intention to reduce harm through speech, the wish to increase kindness through speech. So both sides of those, understanding that unwise speech is a cause of strife in the world, and so not wanting to contribute to that. And then maybe the flip side is to live a more peaceful and harmonious life. And I also came to my awareness that some of you are in the Eightfold Path program being run by IMC right now. And I know that you're on intention this month, but speech is coming next month. So you guys are really prepared to go do this ahead of time. And then you'll get the review when you do that path step next month. And then people had some nice questions about speech. So maybe a broad question asked by a few people was, what do the Buddhist teachings say about wise speech? I think this is a great question because speech being such a challenging area for us as humans, there are a huge number of systems out there. And many of them are good. You know, there's nonviolent communication. There's various other ones that have names. And so what we'll be asking or focusing on in this course is, what do the early Buddhist teachings have to say about this area of speech? And if one is engaged generally in a mindfulness or early Buddhist practice, you might want to use the form of speech training that's offered within that system in order to be kind of consistent and harmonious. We'll explore maybe some suttas that are less known about wise speech also. And then we had some insightful observations. Some people had commented that they had seen the link between mental patterns and what gets spoken, you know, how our thoughts affect our speech. This is very wise, and speech comes from what was happening in the mind. So we will need to be looking at that also. And some people pointed out that listening is a key support for wise speech. Well, that happens to be one of our themes for this first class. So we're going to address that one directly. And then many people pointed out also that they have an immediate practical utility for speech practice right now in their work or their family situation. So some people have very specific areas. Maybe they're caregivers and are in a situation where they need to speak very carefully with a kind of a delicate situation, people with children, people with work colleagues that they're working with. So we hope that the teachings we're offering in this course will not just be abstract, but very pragmatic for these specific situations. And a few people said that they wanted to practice speech with others. How else do you practice speech? So this is an opportunity. This is a great opportunity to have a class like this because we'll get to do practice in the breakout groups. And if you want, you could even bring in principles of wise speech if you're asking a question among of us. You could be mindful of that. Okay, so that's great. So this is who we are. And then we'll maybe I'll just move right into talking sort of an overview and our aims for the course before we get into the specific teachings. So this course is called Open Heart, Open Mind, Open Mouth, which we happen to notice has the acronym OOM. So I don't know, maybe that's going to be relevant somehow. But it gave us a good laugh when we realized it, at least. But more seriously, we did mean to suggest that there's an alignment between the heart and the mind and the body when we're speaking, right? We have all of these factors coming into play. That's one of the reasons that speech is so hard. Is because it involves many different aspects of our being. But at the same time, that's also very unifying. You know, if we can speak well and be aware of the mind and the heart and the body, that is a harmonious kind of way of being. And so speech is a very important practice for unification. So then I guess I'm leading into the point that wise speech is a powerful practice in and of itself. It's not just a side practice. It's not something that's just about the personal realm. And so it's not as important as cushion practice where we're silent, for example. That's not true. There's actually the potential for genuine Dharma insight to come from speech practice. as well as fruitful personal understanding of ourselves. It has both of those dimensions. So, you know, we can understand, maybe you've already seen that speech can bring great dukkha, and it also has the potential for great good. So we have four classes on this amazingly powerful topic. So that means that we'll have the chance to approach it from many different angles and also delve into some of the more particular or specialized aspects of this speech practice. Much of our teaching will, of course, be based on the early Buddhist texts. The Buddha actually offered a lot of teachings about speech, some of them kind of just slight variations of each other. So we'll do that. And then he also, though, offers examples of wise speech in his own interaction with people, right? Most of the Buddhist teachings are somebody comes to the Buddha and asks a question, and then he uses that as an opportunity to explain something about the Dharma. And so, but there's often a little hint of, or sometimes more than that, sometimes there's a whole story about how it is that he's interacting with this person. And so what if we look at the teachings with the lens of, you know, the Buddha was doing wise speech. So what can we learn just from how the Buddha was talking with people about principles of wise speech? This is maybe not always the way that it's approached, but it's all over. That makes it all over the teachings. You know, almost every sutta has something to say about it then. So we'll go beyond, you know, maybe the kind of basic lists that you often hear in talks, although we will cover those also, so that you'll get the kind of general teachings. So if there were to be a top level framing for the course, I don't know that we have anything, you know, really overarching, but we could look to a sutta called MN 61, which was a discourse where the Buddha was talking to his son, Rahula, who was a boy at the time. And in this teaching, we're asked to reflect very carefully around our speech before and during and after we speak in order to consider whether the speech is bringing affliction to ourselves, to others, or to both. So that's kind of an overarching principle, is that we want to avoid affliction, but we are included in the mix of that. You know, it's easy to think about, well, let me check what's happening with the other person. Let me make sure I say something that is the right thing for them. But wait, it has to be right in our own heart also. And for both of us, for the mix, you know, the combination of the two of us. So speech is aimed at non-harming. It's aimed at mindfulness in the moment. And it has some contextual sensitivity. And we'll go over all of those as we go through the course. So then I want to also just say a brief word about the wide variety of communication media that we have in our modern world. So in the Buddha's time, speech meant that you were talking to someone. You know, they didn't have phones, they didn't have computers, social media. Now we have non-real-time communication like email. We have many opportunities to speak to people that we are not seeing at that moment on the phone, on social media, etc. We're not in somebody's presence when we're speaking with them. And research has shown that these more distant or less directly connected formats, when we're using them, we are not as careful. We would say we are willing to say things when we can't see a person's face that we wouldn't say in their presence. Social media isn't therefore problematic, I think, in this regard. So it means more mindfulness on our part, because the speech that we do is an action that impacts our karma, even if and if we're being less careful because we don't see the person, it still has that impact. So in this sutta, MN61, a key step is to be mindful as we are speaking, to see if what we're saying is having an appropriate impact. Now, in email, we can't do that step necessarily, but we can still feel the impact on ourselves. Am I speaking kindly? Am I speaking what's true? So just to be aware that for us, maybe it's a little more challenging with the wider variety of media that we have, but we can still be in line with the guidance of the Buddha that he gave on wise speech. And of course, we also share some commonalities with people of the Buddha's time. I don't want to emphasize just that we have vast differences. Actually, there are still many internal and external conditions that shape our speech that we can pay attention to and have some control over. So today's theme for today is speech and listening as integral practices. So the two go together. And so Ying is now going to talk more about the ecology of conditions that support practicing wise speech. Remember, I started out by saying speech is conditioned. Well, what are those conditions? And then later, Diana is going to talk about listening. So with that, please, Ying.
Thank you, Kim, for this beautiful overview of the unfolding of our course and wide range of topics related to this. I love the Kim's word, ecology of the conditions. So what I'm about to share, maybe using an analogy that wise and skillful speech as the fruit, and then there's lots of conditions that we put in place for the fruit to come about, you know, the planting, the care, the planting the seeds and watering and the sunlight and everything. And so what the ecology, the word ecology stimulating my mind is the wide range of conditions. So what I'm about to name is only a small handful of them. And so this part of the conversation is meant for you to maybe use this as a pointer to begin to have some reflections of your own. And maybe you have observed other conditions that are conducive for wise speech and wholesome speech. So don't take this as a comprehensive list. Rather, these are pointers and stimuli for you. Okay. Well, the first one, Kim mentioned mindfulness. Da-da, right? We all know this. Cultivation of a mindfulness. I wanted to maybe talk about three dimensions of mindfulness cultivation that are particularly relevant to wise speech. We often talk about mindfulness on and off cushion. And in this part of the sharing, I want to also really emphasize on off cushion practices. We often associate mindfulness with formal meditation, kind of turning internally. And that's wonderful. I mean, don't take me wrong that this is not important. Rather, what I'm inviting is to expand the off-cushion mindfulness practices as well. Can we bring mindfulness in our daily life activities? What this does is, as we begin to tone our mindfulness muscle, remember to be mindful when we're brushing our teeth, washing our dishes, eating. As mindfulness began to spill over in various aspects of our lives, so mindful speech, mindful communication become more natural. And so allow ourselves to expand that mindfulness cultivation regime to include the daily life activities, whether it's related to our speech or not. And the second aspect is mindfulness internally, externally, and both internally and externally. And so again, often we associate with mindfulness with turning within. Wonderful. That's great practice. But also, I'm inviting you to expand mindfulness to include our external dynamics. And speech and communication is a relational field that we can tune into. right? And as we cultivate mindfulness, including the external environment dynamics, we began to have an increasing sense of maybe sensitivity to what might be needed, and whether certain speech and communication might be timely. But this requires cultivation, gradual cultivation. And so as we engage in mindfulness, can we begin to expand to include wide range of what's happening in our environment? And so cultivating that muscle. I remember sometimes when I take my son to school in the morning, I would really sense his mood, how he's at, where he's at, before I say anything. Because there are times that I would notice that he has some sort of intensity in him. And it could be that he's got four tests going on that day. And so if I'm not careful, anything I say that's related to school can just kind of boom, set the fire up. And so I have to just kind of really be careful, kind of tune in to what might be needed. And then could be on the way back, he's totally different. Maybe he feels he's very confident about his tests and he's very happy and he's chatting himself. And that gives me a different sense of what might be needed. And so allow ourselves to cultivate that capacity to include our surroundings and dynamics around there. And then the third aspect of the cultivation is the embodied mindfulness. I think as Kim was mentioning, some of you noticed that mindful speech is really hard. Maybe relatively speaking, mindfulness of our bodies, embodied mindfulness, relatively speaking, might be slightly easier. So as we begin to listen and sense, feel our bodies more and more, we can use how our body to guide our speech, guide our communication. So if you're typing an email, feeling the body very intense, maybe that sends a certain message in terms of how you are. And so really tune into the body as we speak, as we share, as we listen. Even now, maybe just dropping in a few moments. How is our bodies? What's the felt sense of it right now? And so the embodied practice is quite powerful in guiding the many things that's going on in our mind, in our hearts. And the second aspect of cultivation as a conditions that are conducive for wise speech is to explicitly cultivate wholesome qualities of heart and mind and body. And for example, cultivating Brahma Viharas, kindness, compassion, joy, equanimity, on and off cushion, and cultivating ease and contentment in our beings, cultivating ethical conducts. And as Kim was mentioning, these are the ecosystems dynamics in us. When our heart feels open, kind, we can trust what flows out of it. And so there can be a lot of a trust in that overall flavor of our being. And that this kind of a practices can be done both on and off cushion, formally and in our daily life. And so engage in this explicit cultivation and become a potent conditioning for wise speech. And the last thing I will mention has to do with what Kim also talked about in the title of our course, Open Heart, Open Mind, and Open Mouth. And that is, stay open. Maybe even refrain from jumping into grand conclusions in our speech too quickly. And I say this because many of us are living in an environment that are increasingly diverse, right? And many people maybe do not have the same mother tongue language. For me, I grew up with Mandarin Chinese. And I'm keenly aware that even when we're speaking English as a common language to exchange, my relationship to the same words may be quite different from others. I often notice how certain words seem to have a quite strong emotional relationship to certain people. Or for me, I don't quite get that kind of emotional sense with the words. Maybe because I didn't grow up with that conditioning. Instead, with Chinese language, Mandarin, there's a lot of rich emotional connection with the words. And so we can kind of begin to open ourselves to this wide diversity of associations with our exchanges and communication, and allow us to come through listening, through tuning in carefully. And stay open. As four of us were putting this course together, we had a reflection about how the Buddhist teachings came from very different culture and different times. And all of us probably had a situation where we feel like the analogies or similes in the suttas kind of like just, we really don't get it. But as we stay open, we all know these teachings offered tremendous values to so many people down through generations, like centuries. And so I want to end this part by saying that the wise speech is definitely not easy. And you know, no wonder so many of us were really kind of curious and wanting to learn about this. Yet the wise speech, a wholesome speech, is a gradual cultivation. It's a practice we all can engage in. And little by little, we learn and we reflect. So may we all grow in this dimension. So I'm going to invite Kim next.
Okay, so now you'll have a chance to discuss a little bit among yourselves and a chance to meet a few other people in the course in some breakout groups. And you'll have, maybe 10 or 12 minutes in the groups together. Probably, yeah, we'll have time for 12. And the question that you'll be contemplating together is, in your experience, what are the internal and external conditions that most support you to be mindful in speech? So kind of an application of what Ying was talking about in general, you could bring it into your specific life and situation and your understanding. What are some of these conditions that most support you? For example, I think being in a really noisy discotheque is not a really good external condition for me to be mindful of speech. So maybe you can think of things like that and also ones that are more supportive. And we'd like to suggest a particular way of going around and doing the sharing so that you can have a chance to be reflective and be mindful, begin practicing actual mindfulness while the mouth is open during this breakout group, which is that if you could have a brief silence between each person sharing something as they go around. You'll just go around, each person sharing one condition. You'll get to go around a number of times. And when one person shares something, if you could just pause in the group for, you know, 2 or 3 seconds, and then the next person can share another internal or external condition that supports mindfulness of speech. So you'll get a chance to observe in real time how that is. And I know it's a little bit artificial way of speaking, but since we're planning it that way, you can understand that you're all doing that together. And then maybe just to be clear about who will start, the person whose Zoom name is alphabetically first can begin, and then you can go around from there. Maybe you can go around in alphabetical order. So, are the groups set up, Diana? They are. Okay, so we'll see you back soon. Take care. Okay, people are starting to come back. Okay, I believe that would be everybody back. So how was that? This is now a time for comments about the process or sharing any of the wonderful wisdom about the differing conditions that support you. Oh, and just as we get started, let me also mention that something came up for David. And so it's just going to be Diana and Ying and me for the rest of this session. But we just wanted to let you know. And you can raise your Zoom hand. That's the best, like Tina has modeled for us. Many of you know where that is. It's on the reactions button at the bottom, or there's a couple other ways to get there. Okay, great. So Tina, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, hi. Good morning, everyone. It's just wonderful to be here. And it was wonderful to be in the group with three other people. And after we have gone on this round of sharing and realizing how much we have in common, I mean, everything that the other person have felt before, I think, was shared by all of us. But I think what was even more powerful, as we noticed at the end of the session, was just us sitting there and just being with each other in silence. That was just as powerful, as if not sometimes even more powerful than the sharing sometimes. So that was just heart, you know, just heart tenderizing, just to be with these lovely women.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah, there's the speech and then there's the silence, and they're not really opposites in terms of mindfulness. They each support in various ways. Thank you for pointing that out. And yes, we were hoping to create some connections through those groups. Eileen.
Oh, okay. Thank you for this opportunity to have our small group. I think I learned a lot. And one thing that I was very aware of is I was never much of a talker. It took a long time for me to be even able to speak up much. And now when I do, I'm so nervous that it's not an embodied experience, as Ying was talking about. It's like out of body almost until I finish. But I'm also tending to not listen too well when I'm thinking about that and being nervous. So the nervousness kind of overrides a lot of things. And so practicing mindfulness and taking a breath would be a good technique, I think, for dealing with that.
Beautiful. And sometimes, you know, we worry that if we pause in a real-time conversation, that it will just look too weird. And, you know, 3 or 4 seconds might be more than people can understand socially, but there is often a space for a short pause that it doesn't feel out of the flow. And in fact, it can even help the conversation if one person is being somewhat careful. So if you want to put in a 1 second pause, you know, to support your own mindfulness, even in everyday conversations with folks who are not practicing, don't be shy about that. Anybody in this group, I think it can really work and be supportive. And I invite for any of these, my fellow teachers to add anything they would like. So Jeff.
Yeah, I think that that's a very good important point that you just made, Kim, and I can think back on probably many circumstances, but very recently one contentious discussion that really got out of hand, and several times I said, "I think we need to pause right now," and then he'd say something, and I'd have something else to say, but with that momentary pause that you just mentioned, I think it would have saved a lot of grief for both of us, or for me when I even said, I think we need to pause to really have done that. And that's hard to do. But just that 1 second thing, I'm going to try that. I think that would be very valuable. I know it makes common sense, but do I do it? No, but I can. Thanks, Kim.
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah. Crystal. Oh, Yin wants to add something.
Thank you. I just want to say one point about this pause and slowing down, maybe carrying over in our communications in other modalities like social media, emails. Sometimes it's worthwhile to write something down and save it as a draft before you just hit the button and hit the send. For me, it saved a lot of grief, like what Jeff said. Oftentimes, I find myself, oh, I don't need to set this anymore. So I use that as a part of the multimodality communication as well.
Yeah, okay. Crystal.
This didn't come up in my group because I forgot about it because I was listening. But when Ying was talking about taking care to be aware of what's going on with others, I had a question. I don't know if we'll talk about it, but just to put it out there, with regards to those of us who maybe had to do that out of dysfunction when we were growing up. So being my experience is that I'm not super embodied because I'm spending a lot of time making sure I know what's going on with everyone else and where they're at. And so my practice will be to figure out how to shift that. So.
Yeah. This points to one of the things we mentioned early on is that speech practice is a little bit of a mirror for what's going on in our mind, and we can learn a lot about ourselves through our practice of embodying or being mindful of speech. We learn also about our body and our mind and how to unify those in some way. And so maybe this openness that Ying brought up is so important, is that we don't need to think that, oh, if I were mindful of my speech, I would look like X. We have ideals in our mind of what we think we should be like. And maybe to be open to the surprise of the Dharma is that what the wholesome way for you to be embodied in body, heart, and mind might not look like what you imagine it would, but it will be good. Don't worry. But just have that openness so that we cannot constrain ourselves through what we think we ought to be doing. Thank you for bringing that up. And I guess we have time, Jerry.
I'm not fluent in insight dialogue, but I do remember their first step is pause. Before you say anything, is pause.
That's true.
Right. For me, this is brand new. But somewhat also came from what Ian was talking about. Is if I call it speech, then it feeds my dysfunction in speech. But if I realize it's communication or dialogue or interaction, it brings the receiver to the same status as the me, the speaker. And I think that that in and of itself might modify and maybe contribute to more wise communication versus wise speech. That seems too much selfing when I say that, wise speech for me.
Very nice. Yeah, so much depends on our framing of situations. So there's a suggestion that everyone else can see if that lands. If we frame it as communication instead of speech, does that help you in some way? And well, we're right at time. So we are going to have a chance for some more Q&A later. So maybe we'll go on with Diana at this point.